Very good. Today is February 9th. We're studying Mishnah Masechet Baba Kama, right? We're in chapter 8, and we hope to do today Mishnayot 4, 5, and 6, although not in that order. 4, 5, and 6 in chapter 8. We really did 1, 2, and 3. Again, this is chapter 8. So we're going to begin with chapter 8, Mishnah 5. And we should all have the Mishnah. We should all have the sources. Here we go. Here we go. Find the place. Perek Het Mishnah Hey. Hamakel Aviv Imo Vasa Behen Habura, which means he strikes his father or mother and made in them an injury, a wound. V'havel v'havir ol b'Shabbat, and someone who injures his fellow on Shabbat, patur mikulan, exempt from all, mipnei shu nidon b'nafsho, because he is sentenced in his life. Literal translation. V'havel be'evid kani shalo, patur mikulan, and he who injures a Canaanite slave of his own, patur mikulan, exempt from all. That's a literal translation. Now we have to start thinking about it. So if we look at the Mishnah again, it looks pretty strange. It's not talking at the very beginning of someone who just injures his parents, but specifically that made a chabara, made a wound. When we have to remember, ask ourselves, why that case and not the general case of just striking your parents? It's not enough to strike your parents and hurt them. You have to make a wound. Then the Mishnah will discuss the case. And also in the second case, chovel b'chaviro, someone who injures his fellow, it's not just someone who injures his fellows, but specifically and only to do it on Shabbat, is our Mishnah talking about it. Then it's patur mikulan, exempt from all. Yoni.
When it says inflicts a wound, is it like it bleeds, is it a bruise? Or?
Right.
Good question.
There are cases in which you might strike someone, and they could be very embarrassed, and it causes them pain, but there's no visible wound. But this is a case in which there's a visible wound. It could be blood,
like,
it could be...
What about a bruise?
Exactly.
That's enough, a bruise. Well, you know what? I shouldn't speak so quickly because actually there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. How much injury do you have to do in order for the case mentioned in this Mishnah to kick in? So I don't know the conclusion of the discussion, so I'm going to be careful. But some significant bruise. And in these cases, the law is patur mikulan. Exempt from all. And who remembers what all mean? What is all?
All five.
All five, right. Chamisha dvarim. Five things. We'll remember what they are. What are they, actually?
Shevet.
Nezek.
We'll start there. Nezek, which is actually damage money. Nezek.
Tsar.
Shevet.
Ripui.
Ripui.
Voshet.
And Voshet. Very good. This guy's good.
Very good.
Wow. So let's see what they mean, right? Nezik is damage itself. And then we said tsar is pain, like tsaris in Yiddish. Mm-hmm. And shevet is like Shabbat. It means just to sit and be idle, I mean unemployment. So we said nezik, tsar, shevet. Ripui is like rofe, doctor bills. And then Voshet.
Voshet.
Voshet is... Busha is shame, humiliation. And those are the five that we talked about. And if you do the things mentioned in our Mishnah and the circumstances mentioned in our Mishnah, then you are patur mikulan. You don't have to pay anything. Scot-free.
Why?
There's no why. Good question. Well, the Mishnah answers. What's the answer? Read the words. Let him read. Four Hebrew words. Yeah, out loud. You'll find it. It's about the... Fantastic. Fantastic.
I taught him everything I know.
Because he is judged in his life. What does it mean, judge in his life? Judge with his life actually is better. Judge with his life. What does it mean to be judged with your life? Yoni, do you know?
People look at you in a different way.
No, it's much more serious than that.
It's like... Death penalty?
Death penalty. Nidon benafsho, judge with his life, means death penalty. So in these cases in which you struck one of your parents and made a chabara, or you were chovel b'chaviro, you injured your fellow on Shabbat, then you're exempt from every payment because you're nidon benafsho, because you get the death penalty. And why is getting the death penalty a reason not to pay the chamisha dvarim?
Because you do the worst.
Because you get the worst punishment. Anyone who remembers
yes.
how to say that in Yiddish, I'm kidding, in Aramaic, gets
Kim la
a tea from Ilana. Right.
Kim le bederaba mine.
Right. Kim le bederaba mine. Ilana gets to make herself tea. Right? So what does it mean? Kim le means establish for him. Kim le. Kim is like lekayem, to establish le in Hebrew, low. That would be low. Established for him, be de rabbah, in that is rabbah, and rab is greater. Mine from it. Establish him in what's greater than it. In other words, give him the greater penalty. So we give him the death penalty, and all the other payments he doesn't have to pay.
It's very different from our modern justice system. You are charged for this, and this, and they have to go through every single case.
That's true, it is. And there's not a lot of logic. There's some logic, but not a lot of logic in this principle.
Well,
it's this one.
If you've done something and that you have to pay financial penalty, but you also have a life sentence. Do you have to do both?
I think we spoke of this last time. I mentioned that in the American system, there's criminal, where you do something against the sort of the state, murder or whatever, and you may have to pay with your life. But then there's also the civil, where you pay monetary damages to the person to whom you terminated the life early or stole or hurt. So we talked about two separate systems.
And I actually remember what he said.
Yes.
Not all of it, but some of it.
I remember too that he said something.
Okay, so let's just remember why this person is nidon benafsho.
He drew blood.
Right. In the case of makeh aviv imo, why is it a case of nidon benafsho? Because of the asa ben chabura. Once you strike your parents and make a visible wound, then you are liable for the death penalty. That's when you don't have to pay the payments. If you makeh aviv imo, but didn't Asa ben Chabura, you just struck your father on the cheek, made no visible wound, but greatly humiliated him, and even caused him pain, you would have to pay for tsar and for boshet, and you're not nidon benafsho. And we want to say something similar about a chovel b'chaviro b'shabbat. Right. If you're chovel b'chaviro b'shabbat, that's when you're nidon benafsho. But if it wasn't on Shabbat, then you're not nidon benafsho. And that's the case we've talked about more than once. Right, okay, fine. Kim Lev the Rabbi, like we said, okay.
But there is still a question.
What's the question?
And the question is, why is it Aviv Eimo? You can't draw blood on Shabbat, period. Why is it the father and mother?
No, wait a second, you confuse the two cases. They're two separate cases. As Lan just said, it's separate. One is Hamakeh Aviv Vimo Vasabin Chabura. No Shabbat there.
Oh,
so let's just, before we go on, let's look in the Torah, those who have the Holy Scripture with them.
There's a lot of Torah here.
And let's just look at the verse that says what our Mishnah is based upon. So in Parshat Mishpatim, we've seen this verse before. We're in Parshat Mishpatim, chapter 21 or 22, I don't remember which one. I see, it's in chapter 21, verse 17. No, I was wrong. It's around there, it's verse 15. Chapter 21 of Exodus, verse 15, says in Hebrew, "Umakeh aviv imo mot yumat." He who makeh strikes his father or mother, mot yumat, will certainly die. And the halacha says it's not in every case of makeh; it's only if asa ben chabura. Then he dies, and since he dies, nidon benafsho. Therefore, it doesn't pay the other payments because of the principle Dana just said. And Yoni, what is the principle again in Yiddish? I'm sorry, in Aramaic. Right, Kim Le Bederaba Mine. Pretty good. Good. Kim Le Bederaba Mine.
Yes.
Good. So let's now go to the rest of the Mishnah, the last line of the Mishnah. Ha'ovel be'eved k'nani shelo patur mikulan. He who strikes An Evid Kani of his own is Patur Mikulan. You don't have to pay anything. Why? Why not?
Because it's his own slave, so the payment would have to be for him.
Right. All the Hamishad Varim.
I'll just write myself a check.
That the Evid would get, the master gets. In the case of the Evid Kani, because the halakha is that the Evid Kani is Kinyan Kaspo. It's possession like money.
But that gives liberty to really be terrible to the slave.
Although it's not in your economic interest to do that. Because
right. We're going to get into that a little bit.
Prevent the slave owners in the South.
Well, there's a balance here. It's in the
right.
interest of the slave owner, indeed, to strike the slave in order to encourage them to work.
Yes.
But it's not in his interest to strike him too much, because then he's unable to work.
But it's a balance.
I thought you said you had to set him free.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good. So what did Lanja say?
That we have to set him free.
Under what circumstances?
If you hurt him.
If you hurt him.
And you cut off a finger or something.
Right. That's called Chaf Dalid Rashe Evarim. 24 limbs. There are 24 limbs. That's a loose translation of the word limbs. 24 parts of the body that if you hurt them, you have to set the slave free. So first, let's look at the verse in the Torah that says that, and then let's realize that it must be that when our Mishnah says Chovel Bevet Kani Patur Mikulan, it's Chovel without touching the 24 limbs. So if we're looking in the Torah,
without causing injury to them,
to those 24, yeah,
without destroying them,
without destroying them. So let's look.
You can injure a lot without destroying.
Sure.
Let's look in the Torah and see if we can find that verse. It's the same place here in chapters 21 and 22 in Mishpatim. Let me see, where was that exactly? The verse talks specifically about Shein V'ayin.
That's what I thought.
Here it is. It's chapter 21, verse 26. And 27. Chaf Vav and Chaf Zion. So again, Exodus 21. Verse 26 and verse 27. V'chi yakeh ish et ein avdo o et ein amato v'shichata. It's destroyed it. L'chofshi yisholchenu tachat eino. V'im shein avdo o shein amato yapil. And the halacha says that shein v'ayin are only examples of specific evarim, and the halacha expands it to 24 different cases. Right? If you cut off, if you tear off his fingernail, that's one example. It's not a pleasant thing, but you get to go free for that.
But you know, it still encourages quite a bit of cruelty.
I'm not at all going to justify, legitimize, or try and explain. This is not pleasant stuff.
What verse are we in? I'm sorry. Could you?
Chapter 21, verse 26 and verse 27.
26 and 27. Okay, I was on
Okay, so that's what the Torah says. Of course, we can have discussions about slavery and Judaism. We had a little bit last time. Let's just stick with the dry, meaningless, technical halakha.
It's almost cruel to set the person free, because if you cut off their leg or something, what are they going to do as a free person? Would they rather be free walking around? I guess if you were that cruel that you're going to cut off their leg.
Okay, that's a good point.
They
would hobble around to another state.
Yeah.
So, we said we were going to look in the verse, then we're going to and then we have to realize, of course, that in the Mishnah, when it says "Patur Mikulan," that's if you didn't touch, didn't shichata, you didn't destroy one of these 24 evarim. So that means that if you want to be cruel to your slave, you have to be very careful, and it's not easy not to hurt one of these 24 evarim.
Yeah.
Right? The way the halacha expanded Shein and Ayin to 24 makes it very difficult for a slave owner to be cruel to a slave.
But 24, you have to get to the point of hashchata. So
it's
you
true.
Can injure quite a bit without hashchata.
Well, but if you say fingernail, you know, that's...
Like one example, you know, how many...
Non-lethal.
Even though we're not looking now at a list of the 24, right? It's 24 that spreads over most of the body. You know, even one fingernail or one chain.
So finger, like 10 fingers don't count as 10 items. Like 20 of those aren't the...
No, truth is I really don't remember what they are. I admit that I don't remember. I didn't look it up.
But it's not that simple, though. Okay.
But it's right. It's not that simple to avoid this damaging one of those 20. Okay, so let's look in the questions I prepared in order to review what we just said for the past 15 minutes and then go a little bit deeper. Here we go. In the question sheet A, which is Mishnah 5, question 1. What exactly did the word kulan refer to? When we said it, let's say it again, review.
All five.
What is the principle that serves the rationale for the law that patur mi kulan? Yoni, what's the principle?
Kilei derabanan.
Great. Okay, 3. In what earlier Mishnah, in an earlier chapter, did we say the same principle at work? Everyone start looking. Where did we say King Lebed Rabinei at work in our Mishnah? The truth is it was in 3 different places, so it's not hard to find. If we find just one, we're in. We're good.
No, not there.
You spoke too quickly. Go back and look at the Mishnah. We have lots of Mishnah that we can look at. No one's looking.
I'm looking.
Can even look in English if you want.
What was the question? I'm sorry.
Other examples that are applications of Kimle Bidarabamine, material we've learned in the past year, in this Masechet.
Oh, okay.
In this Masechet.
What if he lets shoot an arrow at his shirt and you damage his shirt and you kill him and you only get the death penalty?
You're right. That was a case we talked about, but that case is not in Masechet Baba Kama. Okay, I found one example. Okay, so since we only meet once a month, we don't have a lot of time, so I'll give it away. Look in chapter Gimel, Perek Gimel, which is chapter 3, Mishnah Yud. That is to say the 10th Mishnah in the second half of the Mishnah. In the second half of the Mishnah, we find the following. Shoro shechaval ba'aviv imo chayav. If your own oxen damaged, hurt your father or your mother, chayav, you have to pay. V'hu shechaval ba'aviv imo. But if you hurt your father and mother, patur. Why patur? Because you're sentenced to death. It's the same case we have in our Mishnah.
The father and the mother again.
The old father and the mother trick.
And also the one who would lick Hagadish for Shabbat Patur.
I was right there.
Here.
Right. And the where is that, thing. Ilana? That's
the same Mishnah.
The same Mishnah, just
bottom.
Next line. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Who should lick at the Gadish for Shabbat Patur? And if you lit someone's haystack on Shabbat and you destroyed their Twinkie that was buried in the haystack, then you're Patur from paying for the Twinkie. You know what a Twinkie is? Mm-hmm. Everyone know?
What is Twinkie?
Twinkie is a thing with icing
in the middle.
It used to be.
It's a little baked good with cream filling.
I think that doesn't exist anymore.
No, they're out again.
They came back.
Oh, okay. So you're patur from paying for the Twinkie, paneshu mitchev benafsho. Now, I want to tell you, I really made a mistake. I didn't mean to say Twinkie, I meant to say devil dog.
What?
Now I'm not really sure. I don't remember which it was.
What is devil dog?
The devil dog is another one of those crazy American pastries. Why do I tell this story? Because many, many years ago, my sainted teacher, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, was giving a shiur on bidikat chametz, on checking for chametz. And this is a very high-level shiur given in Hebrew, in Israel, in the yeshiva. And he was discussing the fact that you have to also check your car. And then, very, very sheepishly, he told the story in Hebrew that once after Pesach, he opened his glove compartment of his car and he found, I can't remember if it was a Twinkie or a devil dog. And of course, he couldn't translate Twinkie or Devil Dog into Hebrew, so he said it in English. So it stood out. Anyway, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
I would have never thought to look at the glove compartment.
Look in the glove compartment of your car. And if you're at it already, in the trunk as well. Okay.
Under the seat.
Under the
seat. Why don't you just take apart the whole car?
Okay. So the fourth question was, what earlier Mishnah in this chapter, discusses the same cases as in the first half of this Mishnah, but under slightly different circumstances, so that the law is radically different?
Well, I mean,
of course, Bob just said the answer.
What?
Mishnah 3 talked about striking the father and mother. That one I was here for.
Yeah.
Right? And it's striking your father and mother, but without making a chavura. And it's chovel b'chaviro, but not on Shabbat. And in those cases, chayav b'kulan. You're culpable to pay for everything, because there's no kimle b'derabamine. If you didn't make a wound in your father's face, then you're not liable for the death penalty. And if you're chovel b'chaviro, not on Shabbat, but on Yom Kippurim, you're not high up in the death penalty. And Yom Kippurim...
Yom Kippurim is not the same din as Shabbat?
No, it's karet. It's karet. It's not a punishment at the hand of Beit Din. It's bidei shamayim, the hands of heaven. And we don't say kimle b'derabamine when it's in the hands of heaven.
So if you did that on Yom Kippur, you would just, everyone would just sort of know, cut off.
It doesn't matter if they know or not, but the point is you do have to pay chamishad varim.
Oh, okay.
You do have to pay chamishad varim. As long as it's not Yom Kippur, Shachaliot B'Shabbat, that falls on Shabbat.
So being karet is not as bad, obviously, as dying.
No,
it's worse.
No, not necessarily not as bad. It's just not a onish beit din. It's onish in the hand of heaven, and therefore kimle doesn't apply.
Okay.
Kimle is the beit din, human agency decides only to give you the worst penalty and not the lesser penalties.
Okay.
So in 4a, I said, what are the different circumstances? We said that already. B, why is the law different? We already explained why. Question 5. In what additional ways could the circumstances in the cases discussed in the first half of the Mishnah be different so that the law would be different? Think about that for a second. In other words... in what cases could you think of other cases in which there's no kimle?
Oh, other than these?
Other than these, right? The first case is he who strikes his father and mother and makes a chabura.
Right.
So what's a very similar case in which there wouldn't be kimle?
Which there would not be kimle?
Mm-hmm. Striking someone else who's not your father and mother.
Right.
Like your karuta partner. Your son. Right.
Okay.
Right, no. So we have a lack of symmetry here. If Yoni, God forbid, would strike his father and make a wound, then we'd have kimle. But if it went in the other direction, right? If the father does it to the son, there's no kimle. Oh. But of course, the father doesn't have to pay if he's a minor.
Because
he's kinyan.
Okay, and we'll actually get to that more later. Or
is a child a kinyan of the father?
No. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that matter of the legal status of the minor very soon today. Now, in the second half of the Mishnah, Chovel b'chaviro b'Shabbat patur mikulan because of kimle. Mishnah Gimel says if did on Yom Kippur, there isn't any kimle. But of course, there's many other cases, many other days in which you do it. There's no kimle, not just Yom Kippur, but what other days?
Well, Shavuot.
Shavuot and Sukkot, and Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, any day of the year. Right? If you strike your friend that it's when it's not Shabbat and not Yom Kippur, there's no kimle. It's only on Shabbat that there's kimle. Following me? Because only Shabbat is Nidon Benafsho. Why did the Mishnah Gimel use the example of Yom Kippur to say there's no kimle? I want to give an example that's very similar to Shabbat. Uh-huh. Even though it's similar to Shabbat, there's an Isur Melacha just like Shabbat, still, there's no kimle because it's karet. The punishment is karet and not Onishpitin. What is it? Bob wanted to say something?
I thought it's called Shabbat Gadol.
Fine, it's called Shabbat Gadol, but it's karet and it's not...
No, it's Shabbat Shabbaton.
Shabbat, right, right, oh. Very good. Shabbat Gadol, what is Shabbat Gadol?
That's before Pesach.
Right, the Shabbat before Pesach, good.
Oh,
sometimes they coincide.
Which,
in what universe?
Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Shabbos never falls on Yom Kippur, never falls on
Shabbos. I said before to Mary Beth.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That it's only karet on Yom Kippur as long as it's not... Yom Kippur Shachal Liyot B'Shabbat. It falls on Shabbat. Okay. By the way, don't get the wrong impression from all this. You might get the impression that on Yom Kippur the punishment for doing Melacha is karet, whereas on Shabbat it's Onish Beitin. It's not so simple. Actually, on Shabbat it's both karet and Onish Beitin of Mabit under different circumstances. Just don't want to give the wrong impression that you can get scot-free off the hook without karet on Shabbat. It's not so simple.
So there is a case where you could get two distinct punishments.
Karet and onish beitin?
Right. Oh, it's not a universal principle that you only get the most...
Oh, no, you say karet doesn't apply to the universe of kinle v'darabine. Kinle is only in onshei beitin.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's why in Yom Kippur, if you're chovel b'chaviro, in Yom Kippur, you have to pay chamisha dvarim.
Gotcha.
There's no kinle.
Oh, okay.
Didn't with we karet. Have that guy that was mekoshesh etzim in the midbar?
We did have such a person.
And so how was he killed? Bidei shamayim?
He was stoned.
No, stoned.
So that's kind of bet din, no?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
We said that on Shabbat there's onish mavit, nidon b'nafsho, and it's skila. What is skila?
Stoning.
Very good.
Okay.
He knows his death penalty.
He's hot to say.
Okay. So let's go now to question six. Where near the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim might be the source of the law stated in the second half of this Mishnah? Right. What does it say in the second half of the Mishnah? It says, "Chovel be'evit knani shelo patur mikulan."
And you gave us a hint at the beginning.
Versus be'evit knani shel acherim chayav mikulan.
Okay, so let's go.
Everything in this one's parallel to the third Mishnah.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, it is. So let's look, and we want to try and understand how do we know that your patur mikulan, in the case of the evit knani. Right, I remember the answer.
Why are you patur? Because you can't write yourself a check.
Because you would have to write yourself a check, which means you're patur. So let's look at the verses at the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim that are talking about Evid Kani, of course, and see if there is any type of hint to what we're looking at. And I say hint, it's not clear.
Oh, Eile Avadim Boshet?
No, we're not talking about Boshet. I mean in the Torah we're looking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Torah, I thought, okay, sorry.
Right. Well, it's...
I apologize.
With the second half of the Mishnah. It might even be explicit.
Ah, ki chaspohu.
Where do you find that?
Pasuk kaf bet. Pasuk kaf, is it kaf? Kaf.
Pasuk Ha, the
20th
verse.
That's
the answer. Look what it says in verse 20 and 21. When a man strikes his slave, I'm just reading in English, but Ilana read in Hebrew. When a man strikes his slave, male or female, with a rod, and he dies there and then, you killed your slave. He must be avenged. There's punishment for killing your slave. Mm-hmm. If you did that. But if he survives a day or two, he is not to be avenged, since he is the other's property. So it seems to say that you struck your slave and he didn't die, that there's no vengeance.
Right.
That's what it says here, that you struck your slave, you're patur, completely patur.
All right.
So this might be right, it might be wrong. It depends what the word avenge means. You're with me? You're in the verses?
Yeah. Right.
If avenge means any type of punishment, then Ilan is right.
If it means what?
Right. Bob seems to be playing a game, I'm not sure. Right. If avenge means any type of punishment, then Ilan is right. Look at the verse. When a man strikes his slave, male or female, with a rod, and he dies there and then, he must be avenged. But if Isaiah 5 or David 2 is not to be avenged, if he survives a day or two, he is not to be avenged, since he is the other's property. If not be avenged means there's no reaction on the part of Beit Din, there's no punishment, then that's exactly what our Mishnah says.
That
you strike. Wait a second, you strike your slave, and you're patur completely. So it could be that our verse is the source for the law and the halakha, except for the fact that the halakha understands differently. The halakha reads that avenge means death penalty.
Uh-huh.
So let's read it now. Again, verse 20. When a man strikes his slave, male or female, with a rod, and he dies there and then, he must be avenged. The halakha says that means that there's death penalty for killing your slave, even if you... Okay, death penalty for killing your slave. Then verse 21, but if he survives a day or two, he's not to be avenged. Now there's no death penalty. But that doesn't mean there's no penalty at all.
Right.
There might be a penalty. And therefore, our verse is not a source for the law in our Mishnah. A few minutes, a few seconds to think about that.
If you strike him and it causes something that will eventually kill him, but it's going to take maybe a week...
then there's no death penalty. It has to be...
Well, that doesn't seem right. Because...
I understand.
The blow would kill him eventually. And it's worse because it's slower.
It's objectifying the slave.
So, big discussion. I don't have presently the material at my fingertips. It's important stuff to talk about. But we're kind of... just talking about the legal details here.
Now, I have a little question. A few verses later, we have the issue of his hitting the eye or the tooth of the...
right, the Rashi Agurim,
yeah.
24.
So the question is, but here it doesn't say which kind of slave. Here too. When they say Avdostam, not Eved Ivri, is it every slave or just Eved Knani?
We have, each one has to be checked out on its own merits. The Eved... Ivri is certainly not Kinyan Kaspo. It's not his monetary possession. But wait a second, I wanted to stay in the verses 20 and 21.
Mm-hmm.
When I said that verse 21 is not a source for our Mishnah,
mm-hmm.
because the word avenge means death penalty, and what the verse says that if the slave lives, there's no death penalty,
right.
and therefore you don't know, but perhaps there's another penalty, therefore the verse is not a source for our Mishnah. But what I meant is that the first 70% of verse 21 is not a source. But Ilana pointed out that there's a source in the last 30% of the verse.
Ki haspohu.
Ki haspohu, since he is the other's property. So since, now it's clear, if the slave is my property, then I don't have to pay when I hurt him, because I would have to pay myself. Pay to myself.
If we hurt an animal that is our property, are we penalized?
Not penalized in the sense of monetary payment. You are transgressing the law of Tsar Balei Chaim.
Shouldn't that be about a slave too?
That's a good question. In the sense of...
the animal is also kaspo.
Alahad kama vachama.
Right.
So I don't know the answer, but I have to say the following. We're discussing here penalties, not prohibitions.
Right.
That has to be remembered. Right. If we say there's no penalty upon hitting your slave, hurting your slave, injuring your slave, that doesn't mean anything in the realm of prohibitions. Is it allowed or forbidden to hit your slave? We didn't talk about that. That's a different question. It might be allowed, it might be forbidden. So you're certainly allowed to strike your slave to encourage him to work, just like you're allowed to strike your ox to encourage him to work. But you're not allowed to strike your ox without reason. In the same sense, I believe, but I'm not certain, you're not allowed to strike your slave without reason. Okay?
We even have the donkey of Bilam objecting.
Right.
Although he wouldn't be covered under the halacha, right? Because Bilam
was... It wasn't Jewish.
Free. Yeah. He was... No, the donkey of Bilam.
Right, but Bilam was full of... He would have...
Okay.
You're totally right.
Question 7 we did already. That's the question of Rashei Evarim, the 24 limbs. All the question says is, where do we find at the beginning of Parashat Mishpatim a case in which there is indeed consequences in the case of Chovel be'Eved Kanani Shelo? When you damage, injure an Eved Kanani that belongs to you, well, if you struck this teeth
or
and
eye.
He fell out in the eye, and we said the halach expands it to 22 other cases, then you lose your slave. So be careful. Yeah. Okay, that's end of Mishnah 5. Let's move forward, okay? Moving forward. Let's go to Mishnah 4. I changed the order.
I thought because you made a mistake.
No, I didn't.
Here.
I didn't because Mishnah 5 is the continuation of Mishnah 3.
Sorry.
And the truth is, I don't know, and this is an extra credit question. Why is Mishnah 4...
Kind of like stuck
a range between 3 and 5. I don't know the answer.
Page fell down.
If anyone at home wants to think about that for extra credit.
Does the Gemara preserve this order?
I don't know of any cases offhand which the Gemara is a different order. Sometimes a different division to Mishnayot, but a different order?
I've seen different orders in Gemaras. But
okay, I don't remember.
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Again, different division into
That I've seen. Yeah, that's definitely.
Okay.
Maybe the person who was making it messed up. Like,
don't know. Mishnah 4.
He's in like something in Sanhedrin, like a chapter is backwards.
That's true, but that's
not Mishnah.
That's a chapter.
Right.
Here it's talking about within a chapter, Mishnah in a different order. I just don't remember such a thing.
Okay.
Mishnah Daled is a very interesting Mishnah, the fourth Mishnah. Here we go. Everyone ready? Have the place?
Yes.
Keresh shote v'katan kegiatan ra'a. Translation, Keresh, that's someone who is deaf. And in those days, the deaf person, as we've learned, was also
mute.
Dumb, mute.
But he could talk, right? Because it depends if he's deaf from birth or deaf from an accident.
Very good point. We're talking about someone who's deaf from birth.
Okay.
That's a very good point. Cheresh shote v'katan shote is someone who is mentally ill, mentally deranged, someone who is crazy in colloquial language.
And katan?
The katan is a minor.
Minor.
Is a minor.
You're the katan.
Pigyatan ra'a. Right? Their pigya, what's the translation there?
Injury?
Their injury is ra'a, is bad.
Okay, what does that mean?
We're about to see. Hachovel behen chayav vehem shechavlu b'achirim peturin. Translation.
Makes sense.
He who hurts them, chovel behen chayav. You have to pay if you hurt them. But if they hurt others, they are petur.
Right, okay.
So in other words, if you're in a fist fight with a katan, with Yoni, it's not a good idea. Because if you hurt him, you have to pay. If he hurts you, he doesn't have to pay.
Why?
Because you're not responsible.
You're not responsible.
That.
You don't know better.
So even if it's his parent that he... So that prohibition that we just talked about only applies for a child who's no longer a minor.
Prohibition? We haven't talked about prohibitions at all. Penalty. The penalty in of like making a wound
right.
of a child to his father or mother.
Yes.
Well, only applies to...
Does it only apply to a child who's not a minor?
Of course only.
Well, how if would Yoni
not
bar mitzvah, pay you?
He's not responsible, right? He's not chayav mitzvot.
Besides, not how chayab. Would Yoni pay you? He has no money.
Mm.
He could.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean that a minor is allowed to strike his parents. But if he does, he doesn't have to pay. Now, his father might punish him very severely. But he doesn't have to pay. Okay, so let's think about these two principles. Let's think about these two things. We're going to say them again. If a regular human being strikes and hurts a cheresh shoteh katan, you're hayav. He is a legal personality. And he has a tzelem elokim. You're not allowed to. That's prohibition. But we're talking about penalties here. The penalty is you do have to pay money. If you strike the cheresh, you have to pay the five payments if they're all relevant. If you ready, but if they do it, and in the case of katan, if you strike the katan, you have to pay, and his father gets the money.
Go parade right? Your kids around.
But if they strike someone else, they don't have to pay, right? If Yoni strikes someone else, he's not responsible. If the Cheresh strikes someone else, he's dumb, right? He's not responsible. If the Shoteh is mentally deranged, isn't what he's doing, he's not responsible. He doesn't have to pay. So don't get into a fight with the Cheresh Shoteh Katan.
They still do it in court now, right? He was incompetent.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, right, you're like not guilty by reason of it.
Right.
So now let's think further about these. Let's think if the halakha that says that you're chayav when you strike these people, would this apply to all five penalties or only to some of them?
Well, they don't work, so you shouldn't...
Great point, right? A katan doesn't go to work. And therefore, if you put him in the hospital for a month, you would have to pay all the payments, but not shevet, because he's not... Right. Losing any income.
He would be very happy not
and
to
and
Boshet
the
Shoteh. Oh, Boshet. The case of the Shoteh, someone who's mentally deranged, in many cases, there might not be a payment of Boshet because the category doesn't... Right, he's already... It's embarrassing what he does. He's used to being in that state. He doesn't perhaps feel embarrassment, or at least we think he doesn't feel embarrassment. So, in theory, Hayav, but... In each case, it might not be that all the payments apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had a kol efiam vayesh vamvuyash.
Yes, we did. It all depends on the social standing. And in this case, usually the shoteh is going to be not...
At the bottom.
Not?
At the bottom of the social standing.
Bob.
Mishnah 3 talks about being liable. Mishnah 4 talks about some being liable and some being exempt. Number 5 talks about all exempt.
Wow.
So maybe
thank you so much.
I'm sorry, that's not the topic right now, but I was going to forget it if I didn't say it.
We accept your apology.
Thank you.
Okay, so give me a minute. That looks like a good solution.
That is wonderful.
Cool.
Good job, Bob.
I told him he needs to be here.
Okay, so that's great. That illustrates a principle we've discussed in the past, that whereas modern people are looking for a logical thematic connection, sometimes in the Mishnah,
pneumatic.
It's not just those type of connections, it's also more type of pneumatic or technical things. Like, as far as the subject... Mishnah Dalet is like they're a sore thumb. But as far as that kind of technical thing that Bob just mentioned, that fits perfectly. We often find this. So I'm going to actually make a note of that. Give me a minute to write this down. Why is Mishnah Dalet
he's a lawyer.
between 3 and 5? Because 3 is...
4 was what?
About Chayav 5
is
about Patur,
Mishnah 3 is all
and
about
4 is
certain things
both.
That you're liable for. You're liable for all of them. commission for it is liable, and some exempt, commission five is all exempt. I don't know mission six and seven, I'm sorry, I didn't need that.
No problem. Okay. Okay, so that's a gold star. So perhaps someone will buy you a beer. You know, gold star?
No, oh, wow. I can give him a star.
The question is, do you have a beer?
Yeah. Wow, gold star. I hadn't had a gold star in years.
Okay. So, but wait a second. Where's our class?
You
caused a commotion here. Caused an interruption. Okay. Okay, so Bob is getting a gold. Do you have a gold star?
A star.
You are a colonel.
Okay.
Anybody else you can dispense it to?
I think we need to pay him the Shloom Boshit now.
Okay, going on, continuing on in Mishnah Dalid, we got to the second part that says, Ha'evid va'isha pigiatan ra'a. The slave and the woman, their pigia, right, tangling with them is problematic for the same reason as we saw above with the Chayish Shoteh V'Katan, as the Mishnah now explains, HaChovel Ben Chayav. If you do damage to an Evid or an Isha, you have to pay. Right? No different than someone who's not an Evid or not an Isha.
Because
they're human beings.
No, but
the second part of the Mishnah.
Yes.
Vehem shechavlu b'chirim pitorim. But if this woman or this slave struck you, they don't have to pay.
Because?
And it sounds like it says that a woman could go around the street. Not that she's allowed to strike others, but if she does, she doesn't have to pay. And Ilana says, why? Let's read on. It explains exactly why. The reason is, Aval mishalmin laharzman, but they pay after time. In other words, the woman and the slave don't have to pay now, but they might have to pay in the future. When nitgarsha haisha, if the woman becomes divorced, she has to pay. Wait a second. Nishtachrar ha'evid haivim mishalem, and if the slave becomes free, he has to pay.
So it's on his account.
Yes.
So he's gonna wanna be a slave.
Oh, I know why. They
and
have no money.
Right.
Be,
the woman has no money. When does she have no money?
Well,
when she's married. Which means the Mishnah's not talking about someone who's single, who's not a minor anymore, but who's single. And it's not talking about someone who is a widow or divorced.
No,
she has her own
single,
money.
She but still doesn't have money because her father owns her money.
There's something to that, but technically you're right. Well, but if she was married but became widow or divorced, she's birshut atzma. She's in her own hands. She has her own money, therefore she has to pay. So what we learn from this is if a married woman causes damage, she is responsible and she has to pay, but she has no money to pay, so she can't pay, but she technically has to pay, therefore it's on her account, as Ilana said. When she gets divorced or widowed, she'll have to pay. The same thing with the slave. He doesn't have to pay because he has no money, but when he gets freed, then he has money, he can work on his own, then he'll have to pay.
But the husband or the slave owner wouldn't have to pay?
Ah, that's going to be an important question. Does the slave owner have to pay?
Or the husband.
Or the husband, right? Important question.
Or the father.
The individual would pay it. The slave would owe the slave owner if they...
If it was true. But let me ask you a question, if you already brought it up. What would be very, very, very problematic about a halakha that says that a slave that strikes someone else, the owner has to pay?
He would not set him free, because he would...
Oh, no, before setting free.
You'd want to set him free.
Say it.
He would want to set him free, and he wouldn't want to be responsible for him anymore, and he'd go, and the slave might go around causing damage.
All slaves would go around causing damage.
Oh.
And they'd know that it would be on the cheshbon, on the account of their master, and the master would rack up such a high bill that the master would finally set the guy free. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a technical problem that we can't say that the master has to pay, which means the result is that a slave that does damage to someone doesn't have to pay.
But that could be a good thing for Aguna, that she would wreck such an account that the husband who would refuse to give her a divorce will finally give her a divorce.
No, when she gets divorced, she has to pay.
I know.
Is he saying, like, an Aguna who's still married technically?
Oh, she can really still married, I see.
Revenge against her husband is not going to give her a gift. That's smart.
So even though the minor
don't give anybody ideas,
the majority, they still are exempt.
Exactly. Right. That's the very important point of this Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about Chereshot Teve Katan and Eved Nisha, five people who don't have to pay. But when we analyze the Mishnah, it turns out they don't have to pay for different reasons.
Yeah.
And we learn that from the consequences that occur when their status changes. When the status of the Eved and the Isha changes, the Mishnah says they have to pay. But it doesn't say that concerning the Katan.
Right.
We get the impression that it doesn't apply to the Katan, which is true. It doesn't apply.
So if your child destroys the house of somebody,
of
the father doesn't need to pay?
If he only
goes and burns the house?
Because the minor doesn't understand. He's not responsible. Just like the Cheresh and Shoteh, you can't hold him responsible. How can you hold the parent responsible? The kid doesn't know. You're allowed to let him outside and play.
That was the last time on the baseball.
So
it, I read it.
So,
what?
So in last week's sheet, I brought a story, which is for this Mishnah. We didn't get to it, but Bob went ahead, and you know, kids shouldn't do that. They read ahead, then they ruin the whole class.
I read ahead from last class. That was last class.
Another star.
So anyway, why do we... Did we read? We didn't read the story together.
Star.
So Yoni, want to read a story?
Sure.
So let's read the story here. It begins with "Come on, Dovi."
Oh, I thought it was from Harry Potter, Dovi.
It's a nice, it's a cool, it's a nice story.
Yes.
This is not, the debt is not forgiven at, after in the seventh year. This is not.
In which case you're talking about
for the woman or the slave has an obligation. That would not be forgiven or not be...
You hear that question?
No, I didn't I heard it, but I didn't understand it.
So explain. During the Shemitah year, debts incurred are I don't know what that's limited to certain categories, but are forgiven. So I'm wondering whether this would... This is... It's a monetary debt at some point.
So I have no idea. But my first reaction would be that this debt is forgiven like all other debts in the Shemitah year.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a first reaction. I'd have to check what type of debts are not forgiven. Okay, so I just don't know. It's a good question. You know, the Shemitah year is approaching. Another 6 months. And by the way, I just mentioned that there's a machloket. When does the Shemitah year remit debts? At the beginning or at the end?
Oh.
In other words, the Shemitah
year
begins,
starts in Rosh Hashanah or in Pesach? With,
oh no, Rosh Hashanah. Begins and, with Rosh Hashanah. And the day after Rosh Hashanah, are debts forgiven? Or does it wait for 12 months until the last day before Rosh Hashanah next year? That's a machloket, that there's no clear psak in that. That's a machloket. We tend to hold the first option, but it's not a completely decided discrimination. Anyway, so now the story.
Mm-hmm. Can I read it?
Yeah, read it.
Come on, Dovi, Yoni, Balsam said to his twin brother, the sun's out, let's play catch. The two 11-year-olds grabbed their gloves and a softball. We're going outside to play, Yoni called to his mother, be careful. Miss Bahab, Balsam said, and keep the ball away from other people's property, especially the Glazers. Last year, the boys had broken their neighbor's window, and Balsam had to pay to replace it.
After tossing the ball back and forth a few times, Debbie suggested, "How about a high ball? How about a high fly?" Betty threw the ball wildly in the air.
Uh-oh.
The ball soared up, slanting to the side. Debbie chased after the ball, running through the glazier's bushes into their yard. As he reached up to grab the ball, he heard a large crash. Debbie looked down. He had knocked over a large artistic planter in the glazier's garden and smashed it. Mr. Glazier came outside. "What's going on here?" he yelled. We were playing catch and I knocked over this planter," Debbie said apologetically. "I warned you many times not to play ball near our house," said Mr. Glazier sternly. "I'm going to speak with your parents." He walked the boys home. "Your boys damaged our property," Mr. Glazier told the Balsams. "They're going to have to pay." "I'm sorry about the damage," said Mrs. Balsam. We'll talk to them. "Last year we paid for the window," Mr. Balsam said to the twins. "This time you're going to have to pay from your allowance money as a lesson to be more careful. We'll drive to the gardening shop now, and you'll buy the Glazers another planter, similar to the one you broke." The Balsams chose a nice ceramic planter, and the boys brought it over to the Glazers. "We brought this to replace the gardener we broke," Debbie said. Mrs. Glazer looked at the planter. "Thank you," she said, "but this will not suffice. The planter you broke was artistic and more expensive than this." Debbie and Annie looked at each other, flustered. "We thought this planter looked almost the same," Annie said. "I'm sorry," said Mrs. Glazer, "but the other planter was worth more. I expect you and your parents to feel the full value of the damage." The boys returned home dejected. "What should we do now?" they asked. "We spent almost all our saved allowance. Let this be a lesson about how careful you have to be with other people's property," said their father. "But we'll take the issue over to Rabbi Sedek."
I'm going to stop you. Thank you very much. So what's the law? What's the deen?
That they have to pay.
They really don't have to pay.
The halakha is they don't have to pay. Do the parents have to pay?
No.
No one has to pay. The kids are not responsible for their deeds because they're minors. So, what's going to happen in the story now?
Well, Rabbi Tzedek's going to
tell them not to pay.
He's a Paskan, right? So he's going to go.
Well, I read it, so it's not fair.
Spoiler alert.
You only want to continue?
After Marv, Mr. Balsam and the twins and Mr. Glazer sat down with Rabbi Tzedek. "It's already the second time the boys damaged our property with their ball playing," said Mr. Glazer. "Isn't it my right to demand full compensation for the damage?" Rabbi Tzedek said, "A child who damages is legally exempt from paying, even when he grows up. But it is proper for his parents to pay nonetheless." Rabbi Tzedek then explained the Mishnah, BK 87A.
What does BK stand for?
Babakama,
right?
Teaches that a child under bar mitzvah who damages is legally exempt since he has no legal culpability.
Right.
Even when he matures, he is not accountable for the damages of his childhood.
Okay, so I'll just stop you for a second. CM is Choshen Mishpat, right? We're talking here about the Torah, the work of Jewish law, that brings from our Mishnah that the minor is not responsible even when he grows up. Because we have in the Mishnah the contrast between the Sherishot HaKatan on the one hand and the Eved Nisha. The Eved Nisha, they have to pay when they quote-unquote grow up, right? When the status changes. But from the contrast, we see that the Katan doesn't have to pay. Now, Rabbi Tzedek said that it's a nice thing if the parents of the child pay, but the proper was the word he uses, and that's mentioned in the halakha, that it's not a nice thing. But the letter of the law, you call Shurat Hadin, is what the Mishnah said. Don't have to pay. Okay, let's go on.
Similarly, a child who stole must return whatever he still has, but is legally exempt from returning what was lost, even after he matures. However, based on his or his parents should discipline the child for having stolen or damaged, so that he should not continue doing so.
Right, you have to remind the kid not to play by the Glazer's front yard.
Which they did.
And it didn't help. Okay, we'll read on.
Are you saying they don't have to pay at all, Mr. Glazer? Asked Mr. Glazer incredulously. No, the Gemara relates that Rav Ashi was made to pay for a loan document that he destroyed, said Rav Tzedek. Rav Ashi explains that he burned it when he was a child. Many authorities derive from this that although the child is legally exempt, there is a moral responsibility for him to pay when he matures. Nowadays, the parents usually pay instead to relieve him of that responsibility.
But it's only a moral responsibility. It's not a halachic responsibility. Go on.
Rama also writes that...
You know what the Rama is? Right, the Rama.
Moshe Ishalish.
Right, Rav Moshe Ishalish, who writes the Ashkenazi gloss in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is written by Rav Yosef Cairo, which gives the Sephardi tradition, whereas the Mapa of Rav Moshe Ishalish gives us the Ashkenazi tradition. And O.C. is Or HaChaim.
Also writes that if a child sins, it is proper that he do something for atonement when he matures. Thus, if he stole or damaged, it is proper to pay. Mishnah Berurah 3:4-3. Some infer that from the Rama's language, do something is not necessarily to pay the full amount. But
as far as atonement goes.
Yeah.
Not talking about legal obligation here.
But Sefer Chadashim,
Chasidim,
advocates paying fully to achieve complete atonement.
Okay, skip the parentheses and just read the last line.
It is especially advisable to properly compensate and afflict neighbors to preserve good relations with them.
Yasha koach.
So I have a question. If
yes.
Your child, you go with the child to see the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
And you let's go to the next thing. And your child defaces the Mona Lisa or makes a tear in this very cheap painting. You're exempt?
That's a good question. Everyone hear the question?
Yeah.
But I think actually the answer could be ascertained from the material we've learned for the past 8 or 9 months.
Okay, can we say the question one more time?
Say the question one more time.
Okay, you go to the Louvre with your child, and you go straight to the Mona Lisa, and your child tears the painting or uses his crayons to draw over it, or God knows, or better, even magic markers. You have no responsibility. You brought the child to a very vulnerable space.
Yeah.
So you answered your own question.
You have no responsibility.
You do. I think you do have.
I think she answered her own question when she said you brought the child to a very
vulnerable
place.
Yes,
that you were taking the risk.
You were taking a certain risk. We learned that a person is responsible for his animals, right?
Yes.
Right? And when you don't watch them properly, you have to pay.
Yes.
Not because the animals are responsible, but because you didn't do what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
So the basic law is clearly that the katan as a legal entity, is not responsible. But parents are certainly responsible for watching their children.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the case of the ball playing, kids are allowed to play ball. But it seems to me, if you take your kid to the museum, then it's just like taking your goat to the museum, right? Excuse me.
anything could be, in this case it was some, it could have been some great lawn sculpture that they had. You know, why is that different than, you know, maybe they had...
Right. What is that? Shahuli.
Yeah, right.
In the Dallas Arboretum.
Yes, so the question will come to the following. Was there pshia? Remember the word pshia? Mm-hmm. Negligence?
Yeah.
On the part of the parents?
I think there was.
It depends on each case. In the case of the ball playing, there's no negligence on the part of the parents that they let the kids play ball. But I think if you take your kid to the... Why do you pronounce it?
The Dallas Arboretum had a wonderful exhibit of Chahuli, whose all these sculptures are glass.
Right, so if you take your kid to a place where he's liable to do damage without a leash...
Uh-huh. Hold him on a leash.
Then there might be pshia, but again, the child is exempt.
Yeah. You are irresponsible. Yeah.
But the question then becomes, is the parent a poshea? A negligenter would be my thing.
Yeah, because people are very fond of their children and they do things.
Yeah, sometimes. Let me share with you a small thing. One parent came to me for interview of their two children for piano lessons. And they brought with them from all things a ball. And the children started throwing the ball all over my grand piano. And I immediately sent them out. But would they have damaged my piano? I would have needed to replace it for $35,000.
Yes.
But the parents would have to replace it.
I think they should.
So again, the question is, were the parents negligent? But as far as the children are...
The children exempt. Are children. They raise them like
that. And it's not the parents will have to pay because the children did damage. No. The parents have to pay because the parents were negligent. In watching their children, it's a different legal category.
It's like a shor nagach.
Exactly.
So do we
exactly.
have that category in the Mishnah?
We didn't learn such a category, but to me it seems obvious.
So,
that if you have to watch your shor or your goat, you have to watch your kid. But what the parameters of that is going to be different. Okay, so I think that we could go on to the questions I have in the Mishnah. So we're going to the Mishnah question sheet, B, Mishnah 4, and I have there six questions that I ask. Here we go. Where have we earlier seen in this tractate a parallel lack of symmetry vis-a-vis a normal person's interactions with Chereshot Teva Katan?
We had these.
Do you know what?
Lack of symmetry. Where have we seen a parallel?
In this chapter or in the second?
It wasn't in this chapter. We had the same thing of Pigiatan Ra'a.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know...
Here, Mishnah Daled in Perek, chapter 6.
Mishnah Daled in chapter 6.
Yes. השולחת הבעירה ביד חירש שוטה וקטן, כתוב בדיני אדם וחייב בדיני אדם.
Where is what your... I don't see the פגיעתן רעה. I mean, I have the Mishnah in front of me.
Ah, פגיעתן רעה you want.
No, this lack of symmetry.
Ah.
If A does to B, what B does to A, the law is different.
Right.
Oh, no, sorry, I didn't find
it. Right, so that we don't find here yet. We have to look further. I don't exactly remember where it is, but I know it's here. If we look, we'll find it. If we look...
Well, no, we in this chapter. Ha-mevayesh ha-yeshen chayav. Slicha, ha-mevayesh et ha-yeshen chayav. Ve-yeshen shebi-yesh patur.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's very right good. Oh,
it's right, it's an oral chapter.
I didn't even think of that.
Lawn is shining today.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's very good. But that's not exactly what I asked, because I asked...
You wanted to get
Because Shoteh
Katan. He needs a star.
Oh, okay. Well, you said A to B.
Yeah, but
B to
but
okay.
Good. But good.
I'm sorry.
Half a star.
No, what full star.
Is that star thing? We can pass it alone.
So we're still looking?
Yes.
For this,
of course.
Where was it? Where was this?
We're optimistic.
Okay, so I found one of them. I'm in Perek Dalet Mishnah Dalet. Perek Dalet Mishnah Dalet.
I came to it this second.
Yeah.
Chapter 4, Mishnah 4. Chapter 4, Mishnah 4. Shul shel pikeach, an ox belonging to a normal person, shenagach shul shel cheresh shoteh v'katan, that gored an ox belonging to a cheresh shoteh v'katan, chayav, have to pay. Shel cheresh shoteh v'katan, as an ox belonging to a cheresh shoteh v'katan, shenagach shul shel pikeach, that gored the ox of a normal person, patur.
Right.
Because the cheresh shoteh v'katan is not responsible to look out for the ox. He can't be called negligent because he has no responsibility. So he doesn't have to pay.
But the katan, how does he own the ox to begin with?
Good question. Katan actually can own
inherit
property.
Inherit.
Sure. Right, yes. Actually, it's discussed here.
Yes.
That's when we talked about the caregiver or the...
Oh, right, the apotropus, right.
Right, right, okay.
A katan can own property. Okay, so with that behind us, let's go back to the question sheet. We're in B2 now. Can you think of certain types of payments that the shotem might not be eligible for when injury is done to him? We discussed that already. That's the review, right? The shotem is not eligible, for example, for perhaps boshik and perhaps shevet. He doesn't work. And perhaps he's not.
Like for, but how about like Dickens' time, if you have children.
What's the word?
Like Charles Dickens, you know, his place, like you have children working in whatever.
As thieves.
Well, no, not that. But like even if they're doing legitimate work in some factory.
They do it in India.
Yeah, and
so they would not be able to work. You're if right. They were not able to work as child laborers on account of their injury, still not the person causing the injury would still not be liable for.
No, I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact. I was assuming, as the halakha assumes, that children don't work. But if I don't know if children do work, I don't know.
But don't forget that a minor is under 13, right?
Yes.
So it's not what we consider minor under 18.
I don't know how. I don't remember how young the kids were.
Yeah, but like in Dickens, exactly.
Or in Iran today.
Okay. Question 3. Can you think of certain type of payments that a katan might not be eligible for when the injury is done? We had the same question. We talked about it. Okay.
Yes.
4. What type of evid is this Mishnah referring to?
Evid
Kanani. Well, it's either evid Kanani or evid
Ivri.
So Yoni says evid Kanani. So you are saying, if we look at the Mishnah again, that this Eved who's compared to the Isha, if he does damage...
No, it's Eved Ivri because he is going free.
You can Eved Kanani also not, goes free.
Yeah, if you cut off
his... Kanani is not Eved Olam?
Eved Kanani is an Eved Olam.
But what if you cut
except
off
for
his...
the fact that you could set him free if you want. Or, like Lan just said, Rashi Everim, you have to set him free.
So it can be either one?
Well, no, it can't be either one. Let's go back to the Mishnah and remember exactly what it says. It says that this Eved doesn't have to pay if he caused damage, but after time, if and when he is released, he does have to pay. So, the question would be, an Eved Ivri, do we say that as long as he's an Eved, he doesn't have to pay? Why wouldn't he have to pay?
He has no money.
Because he has no money. Is that true that an Eved Ivri has no money? That's the question. Now, I claim in parentheses here on the sheet, the answer can be inferred from Mishnah 3 of this chapter. Let's see what it says about Eved Ivri in this chapter. Let's read from the beginning. First, it talked about Mishnah 3 of our chapter, right? Then it says, "Achovel be'evit ivri, chayav be'kulan." Chutz min ha'shevet bizman shushelo. Let's analyze that. I'll say it in English, then we'll analyze it. He who does damage to an evit ivri has to pay all of the payments except for unemployment when the slave was his own. inference being that if this slave is not his own, and you did damage to the slave,
he got paid.
The slave got paid. That might be proof that the slave can own property. Because he just got paid.
Well, but only if he was injured.
Okay, but it would prove in principle that the slave can have money. The Eved Ivri.
Eved Knani cannot have money.
And in the case of the Eved Ivri, I'm sorry, the case of Eved Knani, if you did him damage,
you set him free.
Oh, no, wait a second. Look at the end of Mishnah Hay. Achovel Eved Knani, shelo patur mikulan. If you did damage to your own Eved, you're patur mikulan. But if it was someone else's Eved, you have to pay.
But you pay the owner.
But you pay the owner. In the case of the Eved Ivri, as far as I understand, you pay the Eved Ivri because he's not Kinyan Kaspo.
So you pay him salary too?
No, the Eved Ivri, like we just said, Chutz Min Hashevet. When you own an Eved Ivri and you do him... of course, the answer is right here. I'm sorry, the answer is even clearer than I just said. Let's read again Mishnah Gimel. Read those 9, 8 words, 10 words of Mishnah Gimel. Middle of Mishnah Gimel. Ha-chovel be'eved ivri, chayav be'kulan. You have to pay all the payments. Chutz min ha-shevet, except for employment, unemployment, bizman shu shalo, when it's your slave. The implication is that if we're not talking about shevet, but other payments, you have to pay even when you did damage to your own slave. You have to pay your slave. That's what it says. You have to pay your slave, except if it's shevet. That's proof that the slave, which slave the Eved Ivri, owns property.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Eved Knani. So, the Eved Ivri doesn't own his time, but he owns his own body. He can have a bank account. All the money he makes from working belongs to his master. But if he gets an inheritance, it's his. Or if his master strikes him and causes embarrassment or whatever it is, as long as it's not Shevet, but all the other payments go to the Eved Ivri. That's pretty clear proof.
If another person strikes him.
Of course, of course. And that's pretty clear proof. If we want to go now back to our Mishnah, that when our Mishnah says, Mishnah Dalet, we're back to Mishnah Dalet, when it says that the pigiyah, the damage done by an Eved, is ra, because he doesn't have to pay when he damages you, it's clearly now, we see clearly, it's only talking about the Eved Knani. He doesn't have money. But the Eved Ivri potentially has money.
What if the Eved Ivri didn't inherit and didn't get hit? He has no money then.
Then he's just like me or you, who might not have any money when we get in an accident.
Oh.
We might not be able to pay immediately, but in principle, we're both responsible and we are legal personalities that can own money.
Also, I have a debt at that point. Yeah.
And you, just like you incur debts, and Eved Ivri can incur debts. All that his owner owns is his time. That's pretty important.
Well, but his owner, is his owner responsible for housing him and providing him with food and things like that?
I think he is.
So it's not just like an uncompensated employee. I mean, he's got...
Get some compensation.
So, well, I mean, but like the owner is providing him with food, clothing, whatever, shelter, things like that. So,
but it's not tit for tat. It's not that I compute how much I give him and that's what he has to give back to me. He has to give all of his time.
Mm-hmm. And if he gets sick, the owner is also has to, does the owner have to cover his medical care?
I admit that I don't know.
Rabbi, but didn't you say that Eved Knan, whoever is a slave for a Jew, is kind of a Jew too, no?
That's an Eved Kanani. The Eved Kanani, in order to become a slave of a Jew, has to undergo partial conversion.
But not complete.
But not complete. The completion of the conversion is when he is freed. Freed. But that's Eved Kanani, as far as Eved Ivri, he's a full
So which Jew. Part of the conversion is he missing?
I'm sorry that I forgot.
I think it was the fact that he's considered like a woman.
But she's talking about mikveh and yes. Brit Milah. I don't.
Oh, only half now. His body goes in the mikveh. I'm just kidding.
No. I can't remember now.
The toes.
Yeah. No. That I knew. Very recently I knew the answer. Sorry that I remember.
Is he circumcised?
Yes, he is, but I don't remember when. When he's bought and when he's freed. I just don't remember. And the same thing in mikveh. I don't remember.
Okay.
So the minute he accepts working for a Jew, he obligates himself to convert.
Yeah.
Partially.
He's bought, doesn't he?
But when he's freed, isn't he going through the second half?
Yes. But what? So?
Oh, by choice.
He doesn't have to go free.
If he wants to become free, he has to become Jewish?
Yes. Yes, because he is already Jewish. He's just not bound to those mitzvot that are mitzvot aseh shezman grama, positive time bound, because his time belongs to his owner.
So he can't be sold to a non-Jew?
No, he can't be. So if anyone's interested, I'll tell you the law. Again, this is not practical, not today, but if I go to the slave market and I see a non-Jewish slave there and I want to buy him, I have to tell him that if I buy you, you have to become partially Jewish. And he can refuse.
Oh.
And then he can be sold to a non-Jew. Now, the theory is that he's usually going to want to be bought by a Jew, because the conditions are better when you're bought by a Jew than when a non-Jew usually. He'll want to do it. And now remember, he does undergo mikveh and brit milah at the beginning of the process. Within 12 months, I think, of being purchased by a Jew, he has to agree to undergo the milah and the tefillah, the conversion of the milah, circumcision, and immersion. And if he doesn't agree within 12 months, I have to
sell him.
Either let him grow or sell him to a non-Jew. But once he undergoes those two things, I cannot sell him to a non-Jew. Of course not, because he's Jewish. But he doesn't have to do positive time bound mitzvot, because his time belongs to me. The minute I release him, and the assumption is he would want to be released, he's now obligated in those few mitzvot that he's not obligated in when he was my slave.
So what did he need to do when he was released to become total Jew?
I think it's coming back to me, nothing. Just he goes free, and that is the final stage of his conversion. His get shichrur, his document of release, becomes his conversion document.
It's called get also?
It's called get shichrur, yes.
Wow.
All get means is a release. Document.
Really?
Oh, wow.
So who is it that gets his ear pierced who doesn't want to become free?
That's the Eved Ivri who wants to stay longer than his term.
Yeah.
We don't, of course, slavery is repugnant, but if you have to be a slave, it's pretty good to be a Jewish slave compared to other slaves.
So in the South, when Jews had slaves, did they follow
that? Did Jews have slaves?
Yes.
They
were Jewish slave owners.
I don't know.
Well, they were reformed. Depends on what kind of community it was.
Just kidding. They didn't follow halakha.
I don't know. That's a good question. Could you please research that on the internet?
I would love to.
I would really like to know the answer to the question.
Or in South America, or, you know...
There certainly were Jews that had slaves in the recent past, and there certainly were observant Jews that had slaves in the recent past. How they actually behaved with them, I don't know.
Hey, you know, you talk about slaves, but to me it sounds like employees. I mean...
No, it's not.
No?
But remember, we talked a few minutes ago that the owner of the Eved Kanani is allowed to strike him in order to encourage
that
him to work.
That doesn't sound like an employee.
My boss does that. Is that not right?
Okay. So we're going on to Mishnah 5. I'm sorry, question 5.
Question 5.
Of Mishnah 4. What is the essential... We discussed this already. It's just review now. What's the essential theoretical difference between the two sets of exemptions mentioned in this Mishnah? What's the practical difference between them? Right? The practical is that after Zman, in the future, in the case of Cheresh HaTekevatan, they don't have to pay. In the case of Evid and Isha, they do have to pay. And that's indicative of the fact that there are two separate categories here. One is people who are not responsible, period. The other is people who are responsible, they just don't have money.
It's like a lien.
Yeah, it's two separate things.
Responsible but don't have money.
Responsible but don't have money.
But there's a lien on this income.
Right.
Future income.
And
I thought we said that a slave could own.
That was Evid Ivri. Now we're talking about Evid Ktani. Now look at the last question in Mishnah 4, question 6. Why do you think we studied Mishnah 5 before Mishnah 4? Now, that's a funny question. I should have asked why in the Mishnah is Mishnah 4 placed between 3 and 5? I didn't ask because I didn't know the answer.
Right.
But now that Bob gave an answer, I'm going to change the question sheet and make the question different.
Well, you put in parentheses Bob's name there?
Rabbi Bob.
So you think that's funny, but actually I don't do it anymore. But I used to take notes when I was teaching, and in notes I have from 30 years, it says, not you, Ilana said this, Bob said that, Ariam said that. I have this from 30 years ago.
Wow.
Well, doesn't that bring
memories?
Right, exactly. From
So I guess I'm going to put here Bob Mason.
There you go.
I should start doing this again,
say
right?
Say Bob.
You're forever recorded. Okay. We're going to go on. So I brought here, as you can see, Babylonian Talmud, Tractate Baba Kama, page 86b. C on the sheet. Tashma, come and hear.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Meir Omer, Cheresh V'Katan, Yesh Lehen Boshet. Shote Ein Lo Boshet.
Okay.
Translation, the Cheresh and the Katan have a payment of shame. The shote, the crazy, mentally ill person, doesn't have such a payment. And we discussed that earlier. In theory, he has it, but in practice, if the court decides he doesn't experience boshet, doesn't experience humiliation, then he doesn't have to pay. Vatanya, and behold the Braita. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe is Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, Rebbe Judah the Prince. Rebbe Omer, Cheresh yesh lo boshet, shote ain't no boshet. So that seems to be agreeing that you're right that the Cheresh yesh lo boshet has boshet, and you're right that the shote doesn't have boshet, but the Katan, it's not so simple that he has boshet. Again, has boshet means that you have to pay him. Lefamim yeshlo, famim einlo.
Right.
Sometimes he has, sometimes he doesn't. Depends on the katan.
Right.
A very small kid who's not socially conditioned might not experience boshet.
Right.
And therefore, if you strike the two-year-old by mistake and cause a wound, etc., perhaps there is no boshet.
Yeah.
What is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi doing in a brighter?
Ah, that's a very good question. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is in the generation when, as a young rabbi, before the Mishnah was, edited.
By him.
By him, before the Mishnah was edited. He's speaking in the texts of his colleagues. Everyone is speaking. And then he comes and edits the Mishnah. He didn't necessarily put all of his own personal material into the Mishnah.
He might have forgotten.
Some he left out, just like he left out 80% of the material of all the other Hachamim. He only put in the most important, the most concise and accepted opinions. If he knew his opinion wasn't accepted in a certain case, he probably wouldn't put in the Mishnah. Hmm.
Right? Or he might not have even remembered that he said it.
I'm not sure.
Well, but presumably he was compiling what everybody said.
But he was compiling from all these Tanaim that we're remembering.
So, I mean,
people
somebody
have different qualities. Some people are good thinkers, and some people are good rememberers.
But just like all the material is remembered by people who are called Tanaim, I assume Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's material was also remembered. But he edited and decided what to put in and what to put out. So then, let's read it. It's obvious, but we'll read the words. Ha, de michlam olei umichlam. Behold, that he is humiliated and he's humiliated. In other words, in English, it's the same word. Humiliation is done to him. And the result is humiliated in some cases. Ha, there are other cases. De michlam olei velo michlam. An act of humiliation is done to him, but he doesn't get humiliated. So it all depends on the case. By the way, just notice that in 99% of the cases, Braitot are in Hebrew. Here it is Aramaic, which probably means it's not the Braita. It's a commentary on the Braita. The Braita probably ended with the words Katan, Fa'amim Yeshlo, Fa'amim Einlo.
Yeah.
The Katan sometimes, and sometimes not. Or it's possible that since this is a Braita, Anasi, and it's a very, very late Braita, it could be that Aramaic did get into the Braita. I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, wouldn't it also, wasn't he the one who emphasized speaking only Hebrew in his household? And so it'd be kind of that much more unusual, I think, for him to be speaking Aramaic.
I just won't say what I don't know. No, but I hear what you're saying.
I think children have a very deep sense of dignity and shame. Don't you see that?
I can see that it may depend on the age or you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, you get kids running around the house naked, or like, oh, look at the spruce I got, isn't that cool? You know. But
being humiliated, they feel very strong.
They can. I mean, it depends.
Even worse than us.
Right, it all depends on the chance.
You're right.
Is it lifamim?
Okay. Now, Dalid. D is what I meant to say.
Yeah,
D.
But you know, if you leave a psak without lifamim ken, lifamim no, it's very hard to deal with it legally.
The Beit Din has to decide.
Yeah.
Like we say, ein ledayan elamasha einav ro'ot.
Yep.
The dayan is nothing but what his eyes see. He has to decide. Here's a mishnah from Tractate Yadayim. Tractate Yadayim.
What is Tractate Yadayim? It deals with hands.
Yes, it deals with tumat yadayim.
Ah,
like netilat yadayim, right? Why do we wash our hands? Because of tumat yadayim, because of impurity of the hands. Mishnat yadayim deals with tuma and tara. So look at this very interesting mishnah. I don't think I ever saw this mishnah before I prepared this class, and I'm happy that I prepared the class to see the mishnah. It says the mishnah, omrim stukin, say the Sadducees. Kovlin anu alechem hapushim.
Oh, it shows the
complaining
party
us against you, the Pharisees. Shatem omrim, that you guys say, shuri v'hamuri shehiziku chayavim, that my own ox and my own ass that caused damage, chayavim. V'avdi v'amati shehiziku peturim. But my slave and my female slave that caused damage, pitorin, we just learned, right? That the Eved Knani, the non-Jewish slave that causes damage, the slave doesn't have to pay and the master doesn't have to pay.
Oh, I raised that question.
Right. Right? And remember, we gave an answer. Why does the owner not have to pay for damage done by the Eved Knani? Because then the Eved Knani would run around doing damage to cause his master to free him.
Right.
And actually, I got that answer from this mishnah. So this is very interesting. This is obviously a very old mishnah, because you didn't have stukim and prushim after the destruction of the temple.
Right.
So this mishnah goes back before the destruction of the temple, before the year 70 of the Common Era. So anyway, the stukim are complaining against the prushim, against the Pharisees, and they're saying your halakha doesn't make sense, because you guys say that a person who owns an ox or an ass and the animal causes damage, the owner has to pay. But you claim that if the slave causes damage, the owner doesn't have to pay. That's what you guys claim. Ma im shuri v'hamuri sheini hayav behem mitzvot. What concerning an ox or an ass that I don't have any obligation concerning them vis-a-vis mitzvot. I don't have to allow them to do mitzvot, my ox and my ass, I don't have to train them to do mitzvot, nothing. Hareini chayav b'nizkan, but I am still obligated paying for their damages, then all the more so, avdi v'amatishani chayav b'hem mitzvot, my slave, that I'm obligated to help them do mitzvot. All the mitzvot that are not positive time bound mitzvot, I have to allow him to do. I have to give him the possibility of doing all the mitzvot. Right? Isn't it logical that I should have to pay for their damage? Here the kal v'chomer, they owe the more so?
Yes.
I'll just say it again. If concerning an animal that I have no obligation to help them do mitzvot, I have an obligation to pay if they cause damage, then a slave that I have an obligation to help them do mitzvot, shouldn't I also have to pay when they do damage? I think you can, it's not a very, it can look at it differently. But anyway, that's what the stukim say. So that's a case against the prushim. Why do you prushim say that the owner of the eved chani doesn't have to pay when the eved does damage? Amru lehem means that the Pharisees said back to the Sadducees, no, I don't accept your kal v'chomer, I don't accept your othermoser reasoning. Ema martem v'shuri v'chamuri, if you're talking about my ox and my ass, she'ein behem dat, that they have no de'ah, right? They have no mind of their own, they're programmed. Would you say the same law concerning my slave, sheish bam dat, that they have their own mind, they have a mind of their own? She'im aknitem, if I will hurt or bother my slave, yelech v'yedlik gedisho shelacher, v'hech hayav l'shalim, they'll go and set on fire the haystack of my fellow, and I'll be chayav. Doesn't make any sense. Interesting Mishnah.
Beautiful.
Very interesting Mishnah.
But it also demonstrates the tension between the Poshim and the Tzedokim.
Yeah.
And you can see that the Tzedokim are the owners of the property. Because they are very interested in property possession.
That's a good point, isn't it?
They are the Republicans.
They're the Republicans. They're on property and they're very disturbed that slaves might go around and damage property and no one has to pay.
Right.
Okay.
They're the rich people's party.
Very good. Very nice. Okay. I'm willing to go on, if you guys are.
Yes.
Right. We're doing good today. You know we're doing good? One reason is that I didn't just get off a plane from Israel.
Yeah. No, you didn't?
No, I was
where did America. You come from?
Baltimore, right?
I was in Baltimore and Maryland and Virginia.
Oh,
for a week.
A whole week?
A whole week?
So you don't have a jet lag?
So I don't have a jet lag. I got up at 3:30 in the morning to catch a plane, but I don't have jet lag.
But at least you didn't sit all day long.
At least I didn't sleep while I was sitting.
Right.
Okay, Mishnah 6. Let's read the Mishnah. This is fun. Atokea lechaviro noten lo sela.
Tokea in the shofar?
So there is a machloket.
Blast the shofar in someone's ear?
That's one possibility. There's a machloket. What does it mean, atokea lechaviro? There are those who say slap, those who say hit, those who say punch, and some say that you actually did cause them some damage in the ear, not by a shofar, but perhaps by hitting them on the ear. But the truth is, I don't want to get bogged down exactly what it is, because we don't know. We've just lost the tradition. But a tokei lechaviro noten lo sela. You have to pay a certain amount of money, which is a sela, if you do this type of damage to your fellow. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yossi Haglili, Mane. You have to pay not a sela, but a mane. And most of the commentators say something very amazing and very difficult to understand, that a mane is 200 times a sela. A mane is 100 zuz. Remember the zuzim from Pesach?
Yes, tre zuzim.
So a sela is half a zuz, and a mane means 100, it's 100 zuz. So the commentators understand that it's kind of strange that one opinion would be 200 times different than the Other opinion, 200 times more payment, but that's what we have. And I'm not going to spend time on those technicalities. And then it says, sitaro. In modern Hebrew, sitaro means slap him. And there's a machloket if it's slapping like this or like this.
Yeah.
Right? And it could be that in different societies, there are different connotations as far as boshet goes. Right? If you slap someone with this side or that side, right? I think in Muslim society, or at least in Arab cultures, it makes a big difference as to the degree of humiliation involved here. Does it in our society matter?
We're looking for answers.
To slap somebody with the back of your hand is much
more humiliating.
Dismissive, more humiliating.
It's dismissive, right? That's it. It's dismissive, right?
Nod to the back of your hand.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing one would cause more damage than the other.
Right.
Well, the knuckles. Softer.
Okay, so no ten lo matayim zuz. If you slap someone, it's much worse than tokea, than doing damage to their ear, if that's what the word meant, has to pay matayim zuz, which is double mane. Mane is 100 zuz, and now it's matayim zuz. Okay?
A sela is what again?
Sela is half a zuz.
Okay.
Sela is half a zuz.
What's a dinar?
A dinar? Don't ask me. How much is a dinar?
Dinar is a big one.
Could be she's right.
No, it's usually. I have a dictionary that says exactly.
Yeah, in the back of
letter. Evan Shoshan has it.
So lahar yado no ten lo arba motzuz.
What
with the after of his hand. So it might mean that staro means with the front part of your palm slapping, and then lahar yado means with the back of his hand, and has to give now not matayim but 400.
Wow,
that's probably true.
Right.
He can buy a lot of chadgadias.
but I'm telling you that there are many machlokot, many arguments concerning exactly what activity is being done here in all these cases.
Yes.
Tsaram ba'ozno.
That's like that.
So tsaram ba'ozno might be pulling on the ear. Some say it's slitting the person's ear.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a case of tsaram ba'ozno or talash b'saro. That's the first one that's totally clear. Talash b'saro means you pulled someone's hair out.
Right.
Oh.
Not all of them. Not all the hairs. Just some of them. Rakak. What is rakak?
Spit.
Vihigia bo ruko.
And the spit touched him.
Touched his flesh, not his clothing. Hevir talito mimeno.
Removed his talis?
Removed his clothes. Talit is not talit. Talit is clothes.
Talit is clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You took someone's clothes off in public.
Oi.
There's a machloket. You took all of their clothes off, part of their clothes off. So we have a number of cases. The first one was tsaram ba'ozno, you did something to the ear. Talash b'saro, that you pulled their hair out. Rakak b'giyah bo ruko, that you spit on them and the spit got to their body. Hevir talito mimeno, you stripped them in public. Or the last case is para rosh aisha b'shuk.
Yeah.
You uncovered the hair of a woman b'shuk. B'shuk doesn't mean in the market, it means in public.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be in the market. It could be in the grocery store. It could be in the barbershop. The barbershop might be different.
She wouldn't be there.
Right.
Well, could you?
But anywhere. In all of these cases, noten arba mi'ot zuz. In all these cases, you have to pay 400 zuz.
So that's like lachar yado.
Yeah, as far as... So guys, let's look at the questions I asked here.
Mm-hmm.
Mishnah 6 in the questions. Looking at the Mishnah as a whole, which of the Hamisha Dvarim discussed in Mishnah 1 is the focus of this Mishnah?
Oh, that's
a right. Lanja said it.
What?
I didn't want to give away
You
answer.
Didn't want to give it away.
So
Embarrassment, right? Clearly this Mishnah is focusing on Boshet.
Yeah.
Next question. Do you think that this Mishnah is discussing only the payment referred to in the previous question, Boshet, or to others as well? Now that's a complicated question. Let me ask the question as follows. What happens, according to this Mishnah, Talash Basaro, I pulled your hair out, I have to pay 400 zuz. So let's say that I pulled your hair out in public, I have to pay 400 zuz. How many zuz do I have to pay?
400.
800.
Perhaps 800. Why?
Because you uncovered their hair, then you pulled it out. Or because you wouldn't just grab their...
So that's of a woman. Let's say it's a man. Okay. A man.
Then the 400 zuz.
What happens if it really, really hurt?
Yeah.
Oh, then that's the
that's
5.
That's just for the shame.
Yeah,
that's the question. That's the question.
Besides, you damage the beauty permanently.
Okay, right. So the question is, that's not clear, when it says 400 zuz, does it mean I have to pay 400 for the bullshit, and then I have to pay extra for the other things I might or might not have incurred? Or does it mean 400 altogether?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't say.
And that's not clear. And it's a machloket among the commentators. I brought some of the commentators down here. I don't suppose we're going to get to them. But there is indeed a machloket concerning that. The Rambam says 400 zuz is all I have to pay. But the Rosh says no. You have to pay more if you did sar, if there's ripui, if there's shevet.
Yeah, I think he's right. Because what if you break it down, you did one. And then you did another one, because then he could do one, then get on a roll and do everything, and he would only have to pay 400.
Yeah, but the Mishnah says, if you do this, this is what you pay. This is what you pay.
I think it's just talking about Moshe. Okay.
Well,
because the Mishnah gave us parameters for Tsa'ar, Ripui, Shevet, and
Boshet.
And no, not Boshet. This is the parameter for
Boshet. No, it also gave us parameters for Boshet.
Well, I'll call it Fiyam Evayesh, or maybe Yash, right, but... I'm saying that...
You may be right, you may be wrong, but I guess the point is, it doesn't say here.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
Who are the two people? Rashi was one of them?
I said the Rambam says you don't have to pay more, that's it.
And
the Rosh says, for example, so you do have to pay more.
I understand the Machlokes, I'm just saying what I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, okay. Now, did anyone just hear... What Lan said, it brings up a whole new can of kosher worms. Lan quoted the Mishnah Aleph, that said, a kol lefi hamivayesh mevayesh. Doesn't that contradict what we just learned in this Mishnah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? If it's all according to the embarrass er and embarrass e, then how can you set 400 zuz? It all depends on social standing.
Right.
There's a contradiction between the two Mishnayot.
Well,
so it seems
maybe
there's a
or
level.
these are so
extreme
difficult to establish that they
right.
established.
That's also possible.
Right.
Oh, also possible. Or these.
Oh,
might
I get an idea.
Yes,
that this in the first Mishnah, the boshet is the result of the damage you did to him. So you gave someone a bruise, and he feels embarrassment for the. Bruce, this is just talking about cases of just embarrassing people without damaging them.
Oh, no, if you pluck your hair out,
you're not right.
Angry somebody's ear.
And sorry. In this case, I can give you a clear answer that it looks like the halakha is, we might have time to discuss it, that if there's no damage done at all, we don't obligate you even in bullshit.
Really? So, if you spit on somebody, how could you damage somebody by spitting?
I have to define my words better. Actually, let's take your example. That's good.
That's exactly what I was thinking, because...
The Mishnah says, if you spit on someone, and the spit reached their flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't people get embarrassed when they're spit on, even if the spit doesn't reach their flesh?
Yes.
Like, say, you spit on me and it didn't reach my flesh. It reached my sweater or just the ground. I'm still embarrassed. What does the Mishnah say specifically if it reached my flesh? Now, you could answer, because that's when you have to pay 400. That's the case, you have to pay less. But it could be that what we're being told is that if there wasn't some type of direct physical contact, then you don't have to pay boshet at all.
Yeah.
And that's the way the halakha decides it.
Because all of these involve direct physical contact.
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So therefore, from here, the Gemara learns that if you curse someone and they get very embarrassed by it, you don't have to pay for anything. Except if it's a Talmid Chacham. But a normal person, and you can understand why. Because boshet is very hard to judge. And then if you start saying that boshet can be brought to court even if the two people didn't have any physical contact at all, it starts getting very, very difficult to deal with these things.
The court will be busy all day long.
Right, so the decision is only if the spit reached him and touched him directly.
And today with journalists, they would be in court all day long.
Also, I guess, so no slander or... Well, I guess that's covered under Lashon Hara, right?
So Lashon Hara, again, is a prohibition. It's not a penalty. So I don't know. Penalties for libel. Again, libel is forbidden. There's a lot of laws of Lashon Hara. But are there any penalties involved there? You know what? It could be there are no penalties for boshet. There might be penalties for tzar.
Mm-hmm.
Or for loss of income.
Uh-huh.
Shevet. But not for boshet. Mm-hmm. Not for boshet. Okay. So now we're going to Mishnah 3. I'm sorry, question 3. It's what we just said. Why do you think there's a liability only if higia bo ruko and not if the spittle did not actually reach him? We talked about that.
Yes.
There has to be a tangible connection between the two parties. What might the answer to the previous question teach in the case of oral insult? I just answered that. Right? Oral insult, you don't have to pay for boshet. Question 5. What is the meaning here of the word shuk? We talked about that. It means in public. But the second part of it, and why does the law apply only in the shuk as opposed to at home?
Well, let's say, boshet.
And why does it matter?
You have to be
at home, and there are 50 people in the house.
Then it becomes a shuk, no?
No, I don't think so. Shuk means outside. Apparently, being at home as opposed to being outside is a different sociological condition. In those days, all women covered their hair bashuk, but not necessarily home, even if other people are home.
Oh, wow.
How about the mother of somebody who, you know, didn't see...
Yes,
her,
yeah.
So, except for her?
She's my
that? And that's specifically a case of extra special chassidut. Yes. Right. That proves the point.
Mm, okay.
That proves the point.
Right. So it proves that we have kind of a... made a lot of things extreme nowadays.
Look, it doesn't prove it. There's lots of sources here. But this is one of the sources used for that opinion that says that even in a society in which women cover their hair, they might not have to cover their hair at home even if there are other people in the house. Because it's not the shuk. It's only in the shuk. Again, there are other ways of looking at it. There are other sources. Don't, you know...
So even these customs are movable...
You can certainly say that it depends on societal custom. What is considered to be humiliating, what's considered to be respectable. You could sort of say that.
Lou Greenberg talked about the fact in her book about women in Judaism that when she went to Israel, she was surprised that even the wives of the rabbis were not wearing stockings. Well, the American Orthodox women would wear stockings on all occasions.
You sure have it mixed up?
I'm sure. Because I was very impressed with that passage, so I looked at it carefully. And she said she was so surprised about it.
I would have to see. I think it's the opposite.
I can bring it to you tomorrow.
Well, and you'd have to see when the book was... You know, when she was talking about it.
No, we know. This was 40 years ago. This was 40 years ago. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Question 6. What potential parallel to the case of Para, Rosh Haisha Bashok, uncovered the head of a woman in the market, is missing? And what might we learn from the fact that it is missing? That's kind of an idiosyncratic question of mine.
So this isn't home versus, you know, public. We just
no, I had in mind the following. Look at me.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it say para rosh hagever?
Oh, that's just a minhag. I mean, that's...
That's the answer. In those days, men didn't wear kippot.
Really?
Yeah.
So if I
so when did
take off
minhag?
Your kippah in public and fling it like a frisbee, it's not... covered under this category of boshet, unless it's covered under something else we learned, which was hevir talito mimenu.
Right.
Took away his clothing, but it's not. Talito refers to garments that cover the skin of your body, not your head.
So when did men start wearing kippot?
In the Gemara, it seems to be a custom of Yechidei Skula.
Really?
Of certain individuals. In certain periods, it was only married men that put on hair coverings and not unmarried women. Married men. But even the Gaon Mivilna, just 400 years ago, says that it's not a halakha. It's only a custom.
Wow.
It doesn't mean people didn't do it, but he says it doesn't have to force.
It's a custom.
Yeah, of a halakha.
He was more recent.
I'm sorry. Right. 200?
Yeah, he died in the early 1800s.
Yeah.
His descendants lives in Dallas here.
Is that right?
Joanna Robinson, yeah, my friend.
Well, apparently she's very proud of it. Supposedly 90% of Lithuanian Jews claim descent from...
Really?
Yeah.
From?
The Vilna Gaon.
Really?
90% of what?
I've heard that a large number, you know...
So it can't be true.
Of the Polish Jews?
Of Lithuanian Jews.
Claim descent, not that they actually are. Claim.
No, he would have been very fertile.
Okay, so question 7. In light of the first Mishnah in the chapter, what is a bit incongruous about this Mishnah? Lan already opened up the Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Right, if it says in the first Mishnah, it all depends on the social standing of the embarrasser and the embarrassee. How can you set 400 zoos or 200 zoos, depending on the case?
Obviously, this is just an apparent contradiction, because it even says in this Mishnah, a kol lefi chvodo.
Very good. Fantastic. I didn't read that yet in order to make things simpler, but you're pointing out we should read that right now. So let's read it right now. Exactly where we stopped reading, the Mishnah says as follows. Ze haklal hakol lefi chvodo. This is the principle. It's all according to his social status, his honor. So Lan thinks that this is getting out of trouble. This is actually getting us deeper into the trouble.
No, exactly. I'm saying it looks like a contradiction to us, but...
But then Rabbi Akiva brings another thing.
Yes, he does.
And then even more so, it gets even more in trouble, because now we're saying even poor people are like...
Yeah, and then it goes on to say, Amar Rabbi Akiva, says Rabbi Akiva, Afilu aniim should be Israel, even the poor in Israel, we would assume they have thicker skin. They're used to being embarrassed. Ro'in otan kilu hem b'nei chorin. We see them as if they are b'nei chorin, free people, and it means aristocrats. She'yardu minichsehen, that lost their money, that lost their wealth. She'em b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, because they are the sons of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov.
It's progressive.
It's beautiful,
yes.
But it's really not clear how all this fits together. Let's put it all together. The first Mishnah said it's all according to the social standing of the embarrasser and the embarrassee. Mm-hmm. Then our Mishnah said we're setting sums, 200 zoos, 400 zoos. And then our Mishnah said it's all according to the person's honor. And then Rabbi Akiva says they're all the same. There's a mess here.
Well,
it's not clear.
Rabbi Akiva's da'at yechida, so we can... exclude him, maybe.
You can dismiss
from the harmony.
So easy.
Right, so it looks like Rabbi Akiva is disagreeing with the rule that says it's all according to kvodo. It's all according to the person's social standing. Rabbi Akiva says it's not. We all have the same social standing. We're all considered to be rich people. And therefore, the payment for boshet is going to be relatively more, because we assume the person is deeply hurt because his social status was offended, because he's really a rich person who just happens not to have any money today.
We are used to getting honor. Aristocracy.
So there are different ways to parse this. You could say, for example, that this matter of 200 zoos or 400 zoos might be a floor, or it might be a ceiling. Mm-hmm. But it's not what has to be in each case. In each case is a kol lefi kvodo. Mm-hmm. Each case is according to the mivayesh and the mitbayesh. That's one way of parsing it. But it's and the different comments. Perhaps it's the floor, perhaps it's the ceiling. It's the maximum, the minimum. But within the range, a kol lefi kvodo. That could be. Personally, I can bring up another possibility, that there really is a contradiction. And this is two different opinions, two different Mishnayot, that are brought together, and they really don't fit so well. Because let me tell you...
It might be the Poshim and the Tzedukim again.
The solution that I just gave really doesn't work so well. Because if you say that the 200 and 400 is either a ceiling or a floor, whichever you want, a maximum or minimum, then the words Zehaklal, Akula Fido, really don't fit, because in most cases they come to sum up giving a principle, sum up examples that are already given. But in this case, it would not be summing up, it would be actually adding something new. So it doesn't really fit. Mm-hmm. Again, Zehaklal usually doesn't introduce something new.
Right.
It should sums up things we already said as examples, and then saying them as a what's the word? Not theoretical principle, as an abstract principle. So I don't know. It's getting late. Why don't we just read the story at the end here, and then we'll close. I'll read the story. Umaaseh bechad shepara rosh haisha b'shuk. A story about one that uncovered the head of a woman in the market. Bat lifnei Rabbi Akiva. She came before Rabbi Akiva, the implication being a Beit Din led Rabbi Akiva, and she accused this man with witnesses, and she's asking for money.
Rabbi Akiva being the one who says, you're all Israelites, you all have the highest degree of honor.
Right.
So she went to the right court.
So this amount of money is what you're going to get. I don't have to deal with something less, your honor. Okay.
Good. V'chivo liten la arba motzuz. And he obligated the other person to pay her 400 zuz.
Okay.
Amarlo said the defendant,
like the Mishnah,
Rebbe, ten lizman, give me time to pay. I don't have it right now. V'natan lozman, and Rebbe Akiva indeed gave him time to make the payment. Shimara omedet al petach hatsera. That word shimara is not shamra. It's not the feminine. It's the masculine with a direct object.
Okay.
Which means that he waited for her to be standing at the entrance to her courtyard.
He stalked her.
A public place.
A public place. Very good. V'shavar etakad b'faneya. And right in front of her, he took a jug of oil and broke it on purpose. Ovo kisar shemen, and in it was amount of oil. How much in isar? It's a small amount of oil. V'gilta et rosha, and at that moment she uncovered her head. V'haita mitapachat v'manachat yada al rosha. Now, how to translate those words is machloket, but one possibility is that she would scoop up the oil with her hand and put it on her head.
Why?
Why? There's two possibilities. Either she put it on her head in order to use the oil as an ointment, as anointing. Mm-hmm. Or she put it on her head to save the oil because her long hair absorbed it. She had no cleat to put it in, so she took it and put it in her hair to later go home and squeeze out her hair.
Was that her oil or his oil?
No.
His oil.
It is the spilled oil.
It was his oil.
She wanted
to save this oil, which was being wasted in the gutter. Another few minutes, it'll just run away.
It'll be candle oil.
Yanni's been teaching me that. The finder gets to keep it.
So, v'himid aleya edim. And he caused to stand against her witnesses that saw her uncover her head in the shuk. What's going to be the guy's claim? How could you make me, Rabbi Akiva, pay money for embarrassing her? She does it all the time. She's not embarrassed by having her hair uncovered. Uva lifnei Rabbi Akiva, and he came before Rabbi Akiva, amar lo Rabbi, lezo ani noten arba motzuz, to this woman, this lowly woman who uncovers her hair in the shuk, you're making me pay 400 zuz? No, I shouldn't have to. Amar lo Lo amarta klum, said Rabbi Akiva, your claim is worthless. You didn't say anything. And Rabbi Akiva backs up his point that you have to pay her for the bullshit, even though she's used to doing it to herself. And Rabbi Akiva's logic is like this: Achovel ba'atzmo, he who injures himself, afa pishan or ashai patur, even though you're not allowed to hurt yourself, patur, you're exempt from, you don't have to pay yourself when you cause yourself damage. You're not allowed to do it, but you don't have to pay yourself. Achirim shechavlu bo, but if others hurt you, chayavim. So So what's the logic? Rabbi Akiva says, if there's a person that you know he's used to, what do they call it today?
Cutting themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you cut them, you still have to pay for the damage you did, even though the person would have done it to themselves. And Rabbi Akiva gives another proof. Hakotzet et nitiotav, someone who cuts down his own trees. He's not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to cut down fruit trees, but he's exempt because he would have to pay himself. Doesn't have to pay himself. Achirim shekatzatzu bo netiotav chayavim. If others cut down his trees, even though he would willingly do it himself, but if others cut down his trees, you have to pay. Says Rabbi Akiva, that proves that this woman, even though she would have uncovered her hair on her own, and she wouldn't have to pay to herself, but if you do it to her, you have to pay. You know what? I don't understand the proof at all. It seems to me not a good proof. Why?
Oh, yes, it is. For example, you can say to your child quite a bit of things that you think about your child. But if somebody else says it, it feels totally different.
You're right.
I think he's asking halakhically why.
But halakhically,
I think it's because
the proof is not a proof.
It's the same as with the slaves.
Rabbi Akiva's proof is not a proof.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's not a proof. Why not?
Because Amos sote boshet. Well, never mind.
It's kind of got a public policy angle, like the slave running around damaging things to be set free. You don't want to encourage certain behaviors in general. So
not only that, for example, if somebody
So you're just establishing interaction of. She shouldn't do it anyway, so that's clear. And this is the fact that that somebody else is being fast and loose with what they should or shouldn't be doing doesn't exempt you from following the law.
That's what Rabbi Akiva claims.
Yeah, so.
But it's not Hovel, it's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Rabbi Akiva is bringing a proof from a case in which actual damage is caused, whether it's cutting down your own tree or hurting yourself.
In a different category, five categories.
But boshet is different. Boshet depends on the subjective condition of the person. And I would say if this woman goes around uncovering Aaron the shoot, that proves she's not embarrassed by it. So if I do it, why should I have to pay? She, objectively speaking, she wasn't embarrassed because subjectively she is who she is and she doesn't get embarrassed by such things.
But Rabbi Akiva holds that everybody is of noble status. So if everybody's an aristocrat, then
he's already proven though that she's willing to uncover her head for a dime or a nickel or whatever this is, that amount of oil.
Right, but so she shouldn't be doing it. He says she shouldn't be doing it, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't treat her. So she's doing something she shouldn't be doing, but that doesn't give you license to
embarrass her. Setting particular damages for particular shameful acts was so that you didn't have to.
I see.
Do it case by case by case. Right. By case.
Otherwise, so he's already objectified it. That's it. Once you've objectified, you compare it to Chovel. That's what you guys are saying.
In these categories.
Okay. But if you're right, then Rabbi Akiva is really not saying what he means. He really just said, he should have said.
The Mishnah says it, that's it.
It should have said, I hold that all Jews like Avraham, Yitzchak, and they're all B'nai Malachim. That's not what he said.
Okay, I
understand. he did say that.
But earlier, but I mean, his answer to the guy.
No, his answer is he is doing that. Because he, the accused, the guy who has to pay, just proved that her shame is only worth this much.
Right.
And Rabbi Akiva says, no, she's like every other Jew, her shame is worth what the Mishnah says her shame is worth.
I understand, but I'm saying that if you're right, that that's the way to read it, Rabbi Akiva should have said different words to the man. He should have said those words.
I see what you're saying.
He didn't say that. He said what he said, which is different than what you said.
Question, okay. Rabbi. How do you know Rabbi Akiva said that? Maybe that's a Mishnah star.
Well, because he
says... It says that he said.
He says, Lo Amarta Klum, period. End of quotation.
Ah.
How do you not know that the rest of the Mishnah is its
own? Oh!
That's how I've always understood it. It's not Rabbi Akiva saying it as a proof, it's just the Mishnah star.
What is it doing here if it's not Rabbi Akiva saying it?
Because it's similar in principle, except Rabbi Akiva was talking about Boshet, and now it's talking about Chavila instead.
The
No, what is that suggestion?
I'm not convinced at all, but I'm confused in general here, so I don't know.
Yeah,
press the street
and
a little.
I remember when I studied this years ago, I remember that style.
You studied this years ago, wow.
I'm serious, I remember that was the...
And you remember?
Yeah, but I'll look at that.
Okay, so we're ending as usual with a question mark.
I was thinking that this is like raping a prostitute. Yeah. The fact that she's a prostitute still doesn't allow you to rape her.
That. Yes.
That's the dessert topic.
No, it's the same.
It is very similar. You're right. It's
just the fact that she doesn't respect you. That means you shouldn't respect her.
Right.
No, it's similar. That's fine.
As we said, no class next month. And
guys, there's so.